Welcome to Faith and Fandom Frequency Fellowship. That's really hard to say. This is a segment series where we're going to highlight the top 10 favorite episodes of some of our fellow podcaster friends. This episode is Rebecca Godlove and her podcast, Retrofitted.
Welcome to Retrofitted. My name is Rebecca Godlove. This episode contains a warning for candid discussion of mental health conditions, as well as discussion of life events that may trigger or aggravate those conditions, such as the death of a loved one, violence, pregnancy loss, suicide, abuse, or other trauma. Listener discretion is strongly advised. She was given a medication that, instead of healing her, partially paralyzed her. She was aware of her surroundings, but could hardly move or even open her eyes. She was in a semi-suspended state of lethargy and needed friends to physically help her move. For many years following this temporary but terrifying experience, she could not bring herself to seek help for her mental health. Today, she understands that she was given an inaccurate diagnosis provided by a counselor who did not take the time to understand her concerns and symptoms. This woman now carries multiple physical and mental health diagnoses, including suicidal ideation. I will share a bit more of her story later in this episode. I know the first few episodes of this season were more lighthearted. It's pleasant to share fond memories of childhood and laugh over the fact that virtually none of us understood that every song on the radio was actually about sex. We will get back into less heavy topics in later episodes. After all, I still need to talk about how the 90s convinced us that flannel was cool. But mental illness, which started as a thread unraveling the tapestry of my own life, has shown me that it's more than a simple thread. It's a threat and a fear that has been woven into my generation, into grown-up latchkey kids, into parents who second-guess all of their decisions, into adults who self-isolate out of fear that they may be a burden to others, into friends of mine who not only have suicide plans, but who've acted on those plans. I'm grateful for their failure, but their struggles remain. In this episode, I am just beginning to crack open the Pandora's box of mental health issues, Xennials, and the church. Over the next few weeks, I will be sharing statistics with you, as well as the actual words of some of my friends afflicted with mental health conditions. Next time, I will be sharing more details of my own personal experience. I think it's important to note that while I am a licensed minister, I am in no way a licensed therapist or counselor of any kind. Although I worked in administrative services for a pediatric office, I do not possess any kind of medical certificate or degree. I'm just putting that out there as a reminder. I'm a patient, not a professional. For 3 years, I was a part of MOPS International, which is an organization serving mothers of preschoolers. If you didn't know, it's not about cleaning or mopping or brooming or sweeping or anything like that. That's not my thing. I am no longer a member. However, the group served me well after my second son was born. I was feeling aimless, depressed, and lost. And although I was not diagnosed, I'm fairly certain that I had postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety. At any rate, I met some incredible, loving women and their kiddos through this group, and I quickly became a table leader, a small group leader. Last year, I sat in front of four lovely, very different women, and based on the meeting's prompt, I opened the discussion. I had made it a point to be fairly upfront about my own mental health issues in this safe type of setting, so I was talking about medication or something along those lines, and I paused. I asked the women at my table if any of them had not been diagnosed with anxiety. No one raised a hand. Every one of these beautiful mothers carried the diagnosis of anxiety, and in some cases, several other mental health conditions as well. That seemed wrong to me. Not a surprise, but wrong. Co-workers joking about Xanax, Memes popularizing the theory that all mothers need wine to survive parenthood. Friends in abusive marriages successfully convincing their social media friends that they were living the good life. Scandal, really, all of it. When I was a kid, therapy had yet begun to shake its stigma. It was still just for weird sick people, people who couldn't control themselves or who couldn't figure their lives out. And even if, for some horrific reason, you needed a therapist, you didn't discuss it with anyone. Therapy was a sign of failure or weakness or your own inability as a human to deal with regular human problems. It was for couples on the verge of divorce, for parents with uncontrollable or mentally disabled children. Back then, we may have used the R word to refer to those kids, and I regret every single time that I ever spoke that awful word in ignorance. I have not used it in many, many years, but still, it almost physically hurts me when I hear otherwise kind, intelligent people use it offhandedly because it smacks of crudeness, almost an obscenity to be slung towards something or someone frustrating or seemingly backwards. But I digress. What changed in the world between my early college years and that day at the table, surrounded by these anxiety-ridden young mothers? How did mental health awareness begin to claw its way up from the bottom of the pile to drape itself in green awareness ribbons, show up in slogans on sweatshirts, and also open the door for very real and sometimes very hard conversations about it? A lot, really. September 11th and the aftermath. Completion of the Human Genome Project in 2003. Ever-increasing mass shootings in schools, in nightclubs, on military campuses. Just a handful include the DC sniper attacks in 2002. The West Nickel Mine school shootings in 2006, in which 10 Amish schoolgirls were held hostage, 5 of whom were murdered. The Virginia Tech shootings in 2007. And 2009 saw the LA Fitness murders of 5 women just minutes away from my own home, as well as the murder of 3 Pittsburgh City police. Fort Hood, Texas saw mass shootings in both 2009 and again in 2014. Sandy Hook and Aurora, Colorado both saw awful shootings in 2012. More recently, an increase in attacks on houses of worship. 9 Black members of Charleston's Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church were murdered during a prayer service in 2015, and the equally horrific Tree of Life synagogue shootings in Pittsburgh resulted in the deaths of 11 people, most of them elderly. Nightclubs, big box stores, schools, gyms, even an open-air country music concert, none are safe from violence. This is the news that I have been fed as an adult. Along with the explosion of social media giant Facebook and the demise of MySpace, which I'm totally not complaining about, I have seen the election of America's first Black president, as well as its first reality TV star president. I have seen protests for and against almost everything imaginable. I have watched friends and family fret over losing their rights, over being deported, over their health insurance being stripped away, over the prices of their medication becoming completely unmanageable. So almost inevitably, the conversation returns to the job market, and it returns to minimum wage, and it returns to careers versus jobs, and insurance, and all of those things. And while single, never married women have basically been a visible presence in the workforce since World War II, the percentages of married, divorced, and widowed women have steadily grown since then. Nowadays, women represent just over 50% of America's workforce. And if they're not outside the home, women, moms especially, are working from home, joining multi-level marketing companies or starting their own unique small businesses in order to earn extra income. I know women whose small businesses are actually their sole source of income, not supplemental. It's interesting, in a world where anything we need can be mass-produced, many ladies I know, and some guys too, are dusting off sewing machines, firing up hot glue guns, handcrafting soaps and lip balms, and stringing beads in order to bring a human touch back to your wardrobe and daily rituals. But why? Why are your girlfriends, mostly moms of young kiddos, endlessly plugging leggings and skincare online? Did they wake up and suddenly realize that they were made for ambitious and frequently risky entrepreneurial endeavors? Probably not. Chances are better that they are either trying to help pay down household debt, or they're trying their hand at a small business to help bring order and a sense of fulfillment to their otherwise child-centric lives. A substantial percentage of the Xennial and Millennial women I know cannot work outside the home. Either they are single parents, and the cost of daycare is prohibitive, or their children have some type of medical or emotional need that requires constant care, or at least constant access to a parent or guardian. Regardless, the stress of debt is debilitating, especially student loan debt, and especially if you don't wind up working in the field you spent thousands of dollars studying, or if you don't end up working at all. In our parents' generation, somewhere around 7 to 9 million students attended college annually. For cuspers, that number doubles from 16 to 18 million. Most of my friends and peers, many of whom are in or approaching their 40s, are still paying off debt they incurred over two decades ago. This debt didn't pay for a home to live in, or a vehicle, or even land to build on. It paid for the honor of placing BA, BFA, BS, or BSA on top of a resume. In my last episode, we looked hard at one of my generation's beloved Disney princesses, Ariel, and we had to admit that her choice to give up her tail and voice for the chance to get to meet the human of her dreams was a little foolish, a little risky, but it made for a fun ride because it was a movie. I wonder if, for many of us, college wasn't just kinda, sorta, the same thing. A huge investment of time and money. For most of us, that included a massive loan, and often little to show for it, outside of fond memories and life experience. I myself have degrees in English and theater, and yes, I spent the first 4.5 years out of college working at a very well-known coffee chain. And at one point during these 4.5 years, I was also working part-time at a small fitness facility. I've held jobs as a barista, a banker, a medical biller, and a medical clerk. And while every job did require me to use courtesy, problem-solving skills, and professionalism, none actually required a college degree, although all the applications insisted that one, anyone, was preferred. I am not saying that a college education wasn't valuable for me. I loved my time at Clarion. I still keep in touch with many of my classmates and professors and try to visit at least a few times a year. I learned and honed crucial skills such as critical thinking, public speaking, and interpersonal communication. Not to mention, I perfected about a dozen different dialects and got to play some coveted roles on stage in those 4.5 years. I mean, that alone was probably worth the price of admission, I admit, because of how competitive the world of professional theater is. So, no, I don't regret my education. I'm just saying that it took me a long time to realize it, but college really isn't for everyone, and it never has been. But collectively, our generation took the hit for that long-held but false belief. Of my friends who are working in their fields of study, most of them went to grad school, incurring additional debt. And many of my friends belong to double-debt households, sometimes possessing numerous degrees between family members, but also doubling or tripling the debt most of us have. So, shootings in public and private places, ever-increasing protests, polarizing politics, crushing debt, inadequate or inaccessible health care. And let's not forget that we as a society are still learning how to navigate completely in a digital world, facing addictions to our smartphones and the challenge of raising kids who aren't glued to technology. Let's add on top of that a good layer of fear-mongering in the media, as well as the legitimate fear of COVID-19, as well as the isolation of quarantine and the frustration of remote learning. You know what? Let's add even a little more to that cocktail. In spite of increasing protests from both celebrities and us common folk, even things like Photoshop and filters still remain popular, continuing to feed the idea that there is a very narrow, correct definition of beauty, and that stretch marks, frizzy hair, and frankly, most of us in general, don't measure up. I mean, I know it's not just me who doesn't fit the bill. Although I am super cute for a hobbit, though. I'm like the Gigi Hadid of hobbits. So, okay, is this all just a big pay party for the Oregon Trail generation? Are we just actually weak that we struggle breathlessly, constantly, to fight all this negativity? Certainly, generations before ours have had violence, wars, poverty, and struggles. Their mental health issues were closely guarded secrets. Mothers silently suffered miscarriages, sometimes keeping even their husbands in the dark. Pennies were pinched, rations meted out, schoolyard bullies feared. The difference was that the nightly news was a single hour of fear and worry being channeled into the home, and it was easier to switch off. The newspaper could be folded up neatly after breakfast and set aside after coffee and croissants. News media was also completely separate from other methods of communication. Our grandparents and parents didn't have to wade through seemingly endless hours of TikTok videos and political rants before checking in with friends. A letter, a phone call, even an old-fashioned walk up the street to chat with a neighbor, those worked out fine. Nowadays, our primary source of communication is riddled with opinions, thoughts, and diatribes not our own. For every social media post joyfully announcing a long-awaited pregnancy, for every video of an overconfident kitten adorably booping a huge pit bull on the nose, there are dozens of venomous political posts, unfounded and often false statistics and accusations, hateful commentary attached to every article under the sun, desperate pleas to help find missing children, images of pedophiles who may be, right at this very moment, in your area, warnings of human trafficking rings operating out of your local Walmart, parents with opposing views, mostly moms, ready to jump into the ring at a moment's notice if you question their bottle feeding or breastfeeding or organic food or vaccinations or the cry it out method or anything, really, regarding their kids and families. All of this alone is enough to make almost any person feel anxious, distressed, even hopeless. And those are just the outside factors. I didn't even mention it yet that personal trauma and heredity are also huge contributors of mental health conditions. I'm going to shift right here and move away from personal thoughts in order to offer you some statistics. These are from the National Institute of Mental Health Disorders, part of the National Institutes of Health, and the National Alliance on Mental Illness. It's estimated that up to 26% of adults, ages 18 and older, suffer from a mental health condition, including, but not limited to, anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, PTSD, and OCD. Of these, many people also struggle with a comorbid condition, such as an eating disorder or a substance abuse problem, which occurs in about half the people with a mental health condition. 26%. That is about the same percentage as pregnancies that end in loss or miscarriage. 1 in 4. Miscarriage is a similarly taboo topic that is finally finding its voice. And for me, pregnancy loss actually triggered my anxiety. I'll talk more about that in another episode. 26%. A quarter of your friends, coworkers, and neighbors have a mental health condition. Maybe they're open with it, transparently sharing with you about when they're having good days or bad days, but more likely, they either joke about it or stay silent altogether. Almost 50% of victims of suicide were also suffering from a diagnosed mental health condition at the time of their death. And about 90% of victims of suicide showed symptoms of a mental health condition. It's not in our heads. It's not imaginary. It's not made up. And it is certainly not something that we asked for. It's not something that we can wish away, charm away, chant away, or pray away. And before you say anything about that last comment, please wait until the next episode where I can further clarify what I mean. Just hold on, okay? I want to leave you with the actual words of a real person. In fact, the woman I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, Colorado. I promised I would respect her wishes not to be identified by anything other than that state. Her diagnoses include depression with suicidal ideation, anxiety, PTSD, and agoraphobia. Here is what she told me when I asked her about what her condition feels like. It feels heavy. A lot of the time, I feel very disconnected from everyone and everything. I do get panic attacks, but not a ton because I've isolated myself and try to keep myself away from triggering events or situations. I'm constantly scared and worrying about everything that could go wrong, and it just ramps up my stress and the stress of those around me. It's constant. I wish it came in waves so I could get a break now and then. For the next few episodes, I will be focusing primarily on anxiety. It's easier to speak from experience, and it's also what impacts most of the people I know personally. Like most decent people, I tend to become an advocate for things that mostly directly affect me and those I love. You will never witness me shutting down a difficult conversation about pregnancy loss. You will never see me mock a diabetic. You will never see me refer to someone's mental health condition as fictional or exaggerated. You will never see me deny a person's condition simply because it is invisible to the outsider's eye. Yeah, we started out kind of light and fluffy this season, and we will eventually get back there. But this is so important to share. It's important for my own mental health, and I would like to be an example of self-care for many of you who still think that self-care is just bubble baths and trips to Target. Sometimes self-care is a podcast, and it's cheaper than therapy, and a trip to Target. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. I do hope you enjoyed this episode. You can reach me at retrofittedpodcast@gmail.com or check out my website at retrofitted.podbean.com or my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/retrofittedpodcast. If you're listening via iTunes, please consider leaving a review so others can enjoy this series too. If you're considering financially supporting this podcast and its associated endeavors, please visit patreon.com/RebeccaGodlove. As always, be wise and be well. Theme song is Lift It Up by Ryan Anderson.